One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, a Carlton E. Morse creation. One Man's Family, now in its 27th year, is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. In 60 seconds, we'll hear Chapter 22, Book 133 of the Barber Family Saga. But first, hear this.
Do you know who said, "That man is free who is protected from injury"? Those words came from Daniel Webster, one of the most eloquent orators in American history. Webster knew that a man could not be free unless he lived in a country which recognized his right to freedom and created laws to protect that freedom. A slave state may say that its citizens are free, but as long as a single citizen can be harmed by the whim of a country's rulers, true freedom does not exist. A man is free only if his rights to freedom are protected. Remember the words of Daniel Webster. They are part of your American heritage. The free man must be protected from injury.
Today, apology, Father Barber style. The faraway sound of a ringing telephone heard through the early evening hush brings Father Barber from the third floor and Hazel from her apartment. They almost collide at the head of the stairs.
I'll get it.
I'm going down.
Oh. I'm here now, Hazel.
Mother's down there.
Yes. It's Pinky. It's for me.
What did she say?
It's for her. Pinky, calling from the hotel. Are you in a hurry? Because I wanted to ask you something. Pinky left here absolutely baffled this evening. He knows he's displeased you, but we've both racked our brains trying to remember how.
Displeased is a strong word. Pinky and I understand each other.
I'm not sure that's true.
Now, you keep out of this. I know what I'm doing. Here it is. This is all part of the boy's education he is getting from me. Only what he would get in the outside world under similar circumstances.
Well, it's altogether too subtle for me. If you don't like something I do, I'd much rather you come right out with it and say so.
Well, Hazel, I'm delighted the boy is working. And he seems to be hanging on to his job from week to week, too. It's splendid, and he rests up for it, and leaves here looking spruce and eager. I'm actually astonished at the improvement.
He'd never suspect it.
He's alert to his opportunities. As I said to Nicholas, we can all thank our lucky stars that Penelope moved into Peaky's hotel if she was going to move somewhere. It keeps alive a thread of communication. I credit Pinky with that. He persuaded her to lease the house on the hotel roof. That was enterprise on his part. I was glad to see it.
Do you mind a suggestion?
Eh?
When you approve of Pinky, please don't hide it. He can do with a little reassurance.
Will you go downstairs? Come along. I'm on my way to Jack's house to meet a young man that he approves of. I've never known Jack to be so enthusiastic about a high school boy.
Jerry Beetham?
Is that the name? When the father of six daughters finds a high school boy he approves of, I want to meet him face to face.
Hello? No, operator, I'm still waiting.
My word, Mother, did Pinky just leave you hanging?
It's the Savoy operator. She said Mr. Murray calling Mrs. Henry Barber, so I said hello, and then she asked me to wait. Oh, where are you going, Henry?
Over to Jack's house. I won't be long.
Henry had a long talk with Nicholas this evening. I suppose it was about Penelope.
He mentioned it. I don't know what was said.
I've never known Claudia to be so concerned.
I can't blame her, can you? Father was just saying, thank goodness Penny moved to the Savoy.
Does Pinky see her every evening?
I don't know about that, but he'll see her tonight. Nicky gave him some sort of message for her.
Hello, Grandmother?
Oh, Pinky. I thought you'd forgotten me.
I'm sorry, Grandmother. I put in the call, and then the boss got me on the other phone. I'm at the hotel. I finally got around to balancing my checkbook from last month, and I think I found out why Grandfather's got me in the deep freeze.
Oh, what?
You know, he's been giving me the frigid mitten. And tonight, he said, a man's word should be as good as his bond. And he kept talking about the dates, December 22nd and January 27th.
Well, I didn't hear any of this.
Oh, sure, that's the way it's been lately. Well, I suddenly got it. You remember, on December 22nd, I said I'd go on living at home on one condition, if I could pay board and car rental. Well, he thinks I forgot to pay up. I'll bet he doesn't know I gave you the check.
Oh, I'm sure I mentioned it.
All I know is he's been giving me the back of his hand since January 22nd. which was the day I gave you my check for 125 smackaroos.
Well, I'm sure it wouldn't mean that much to him, Pinky.
He teaches me lessons. He often does. Only the funny part, this time he's wrong. Do you think he'll apologize, Grandmother?
Certainly he'll apologize. I'll see that he does.
I can hardly wait. Well, anyhow, that's a load off my mind. Good night, Grandmother. I'll get the apology in the morning.
We'll return in just a moment to One Man's Family.
Four Navy ships arrived off the coast of Colombo, Ceylon. The USS Duxbury, USS Princeton, USS Sutherland, and USS Henderson. They were there to take part in the rescue work made necessary by one of the worst floods in the history of Ceylon. Over 300 tons of food were offloaded and dispatched to the disaster areas. 160 tons were airlifted by the helicopters of the Princeton. Medical teams from all the Navy ships immunized thousands of people to prevent epidemic outbreaks. They also purified the drinking water. After 5 days of 24 hours a day work, the floodwaters receded and the emergency passed. The spirit and teamwork displayed by these Navy men gave us all a thought to remember. We are Americans. As we go, so goes America.
In the penthouse at the Savoy Hotel, Miss Penelope Lacey, in a lace pajama with peignoir of her own design, sweeps across to the door as the buzzer rings, starts to release the chain bolt.
Charlie?
Sorry, Penny. It's only me. Or I.
Oh. Come in, Pinky. The hotel operator phoned up here trying to find you. I didn't know you were coming up.
Oh, okay. I'll see what she wants.
I'm expecting someone.
I won't stay long. Lock the door.
What are you afraid of?
Some of your friends. Wait. This is Mr. Murray. Who? Seacliff 43373? Oh, that's my grandfather's house. No, I'm busy right now. I'll talk to them when I get down to the lobby. Okay, operator. Thanks so much. Well, I must say you sounded real cordial until you found out it was me. I...
Don't be ridiculous. What did you want?
Your dad came to see me this afternoon.
I don't want to hear about it. They're starting a great big hassle over nothing.
It's something to him, Penny.
I dine sometimes with a married man. We're friends. Charlie also handles our advertising, so at least part of the time it's business. I absolutely refuse to be regimented by a family code that would have been too strict in the days of Queen Victoria.
Uncle Nicky doesn't want to regiment you.
Oh.
I'll tell you what he said about you. I'll tell you exactly, because I can't forget it. But the main reason he's worried is because Mrs. Charlie Bennett's been calling the house.
Calling the house?
Yeah. She doesn't want to... Well, she just doesn't seem rational. In fact, the last time, she sounded off with a lot of threats about what she's going to do to you. Some of it not printable. Your dad thinks Charlie should know about it.
She won't do anything. She's never done anything but talk.
That ain't the way I heard it.
Don't be naive. Don't believe all those stories. People dearly love to gossip, and every story is made racier than it really is.
Okay, but I've alerted the house officer, and I've also told the boys in the garage to keep an eye on who uses the automatic elevator. I've done that much, so I guess the rest is up to you.
That's certainly dramatic. Bootsy Bennett will be delighted to think she's made such a stir.
What's her name?
Can you imagine? That was her nickname when she was a debutante. Charlie says she loves it.
Charlie seems to be quite a boy.
Don't judge people before you meet them.
I've met him.
But you haven't talked to him, Pinky. You don't really know him. He's a darling. He really is. He's witty and kind. He's really grown up.
Too bad we can't say that about everybody.
You sound more like a barber all the time.
Okay, I've got to get back to my desk.
Now, wait a minute. You said you'd tell me exactly what my father said about me. What? Did he hand you a scarlet letter for me, like an ancient Puritan?
No, it was complimentary, in a kind of sad way. He said Penelope is brilliant and beautiful and young. She has everything. So sad to see it tarnished.
Tarnished? Well, that's quaint, isn't it?
And he said, if you need help of any kind, no matter what, to call home and he'd be there. He said, you surely know this, but maybe you've lost sight of it right now. He said, we love her very much. Good night, Penny. Keep the door bolted.
More of the Barbers in just a moment.
This is Bill Goodwin. You know, someone once said humor's the true democracy. That's why we Americans can smile when we tell the stories of the legendary heroes who helped to build our country's great industries and institutions. Like the firemen of New York, who still tell about Mose, the pride of Company 40, who had feet like East River barges and a beaver hat 2 feet from crown to brim. Mose could snuff out a fire with his bare hands, and when it came to rescuing people, nobody could hold a candle to him. When he wasn't putting out fires single-handed or rescuing people, Mose helped fight the East Side toughies, the plug uglies, to keep order in New York. But Mose suddenly disappeared from the New York Fire Department. In 1871, folks swore they saw him put out the Chicago fire. And Californians saw him do the same thing during the San Francisco earthquake in 1906. If any American Navy man should run across a Mose Kaiser, fireman first class, I wouldn't be surprised. Because the spirit of the pride of Company 40 still remains wherever there's an American fireman. Yes, it is a democracy which lets us tell stories of such legendary heroes as Mose with a twinkle in our eyes and a chuckle in our throats. So long as we continue to laugh together as a people, ladies and gentlemen, we will live together as a nation.
Now, half an hour later, back at the family home in Seacliff.
I'll get it. I'm right here. Yes?
Hi, Grandmother. Did somebody out there call me?
Oh, Pinky, hold on. Henry, here he is. Now, a handsome apology, Henry.
Pinky?
Yes, sir?
Your grandmother maintains, she told me. The money was unimportant. The point I was trying to make is, if you had been living with strangers and had failed to meet your obligation, the reaction would have been... Henry! Hazel! Get out.
Yes, Father?
What is it, Henry?
Get out of here, both of you. Pinky, I won't bother you at business. Your grandmother was very remiss. She hadn't told me about the check, and... never mind. I'll explain the whole thing in detail when you get home in the morning. Cheer up, my boy. Everything's all right.
One Man's Family, which comes to you Monday through Friday, is written by Harlan Ware and directed by Carlton E. Morse. This program has been selected to be heard by our armed forces overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. In Chapter 23, Book 133, Jack Rolls Out the Carpet. Frank Barton speaking. One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, now in its 27th year, is a Carlton E. Morse production and comes to you from California.
One Man's Family has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.